This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Everybody, welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. My name is Devon Miller, and today it is a joy to sit in for Patsy, that's, you know, with a Z, by the way, to be a guest host for today's show. You know, I might not be in the studio where Joy on Paper broadcasts from, but we're still going to have a great show nonetheless. You might know me as one of the correspondents here for Joy on Paper, where I talk about the latest children's books and authors. And for today's show, I have the absolute pleasure of talking with three children's authors who are doing phenomenal things. All the guests that we're having on the show today, you may have heard me mention them in a book buzz before. And you know, after reading their stories, I knew I just had to get them on the program because their books are just phenomenal. Together, this first duo, they've authored the books The Library, which is one of my favorite children's stories now, and they've also authored Tribeca. Everyone, please help me welcome Howard and Amanda Perlstein to Joy on Paper.
Hey, Devon.
Thanks, Devon. It's so great to be here.
Oh, it's so wonderful to hear both of your voices. And, you know, we have to talk about The Library. You know, as I just mentioned, it's one of my favorite children's stories now. You know, what was the inspiration behind that book?
Well, yeah, I'll take that one, Devon. So one day I happened to be driving by a library, and it just struck me that the word library sounds the same, whether it's spelled beginning L-I-B or L-I-E-B. And so I thought, you know, that's kind of an interesting take on the word the library as a lie. And this kind of happened about the time, you know, when fake news was all over the airwaves and people were talking about that. So it just kind of seemed appropriate.
Oh my goodness. I love that so much. I think you just did a phenomenal job, just the way you wrote the story, you know. And you know, you both have also written another book called Tribeca, and I believe that's coming out soon. What can readers expect from that book?
Yeah, so that book was actually inspired by a real event in my life. I foster kittens, and when I was living in New York City, fostered a three-legged kitten whose name was Tribeca, and we thought it would be a really good idea to kind of showcase Tribeca as a children's story about a cat who's trying to fit in and has these differences, but ultimately, you know, is just as valuable as every other cat.
Oh, wow. I love that so much. Was there anything particular, like, hard when writing both of these stories?
You know, I think writing, you know, I think what's great about working with Amanda and, she's my daughter, and what's great is, like, I kind of took a stab at the first draft of The Library, and, you know, it was kind of, like, okay, and I'm just like, you know, I know this can be better, and I just wish I had some help on it, and so I just emailed it to Amanda, and I just said, you know, what can you do to make this better, and, you know, sure enough, she just, like, took it and just took it to the next level.
And, you know, I was also going to ask about the collaboration process. I mean, you know, when reading The Library, it just seems so seamless. You know, how do you both know when a story requires both of you to work together?
Well, so my dad is the one who started in the children's book writing industry. I joined in later in the game, but I had seen, you know, his success and kind of the amazing books that he created and was really inspired by that. And in terms of the collaboration, I mean, it's been really fun because we live in different parts of the country. We don't see each other, you know, as often as we would like. So it's kind of a cool way to, like, work on our project together, even though we're apart. And just, you know, emailing each other drafts back and forth, getting on the phone and talking about, you know, the Ryan theme and the plot. And it's just a really fun experience.
That's awesome. And so now you also, not only do you guys both collaborate together, but you also work with illustrators. I know the library was illustrated by Marna Mini, and Tribeca was illustrated by, I hope I don't butcher this name, Renata Potter, I believe. How does that dynamic work with the illustrators? Is it almost the same as when both of you collaborate on a book? Tell us about it.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's different with every publisher. Tribeca was published by Marshall Cavendish and the library by Yeehoo Press. And with Yeehoo Press and the library, you know, we didn't have a ton of input, I would say. We were sent examples of the illustrations, and we had a chance to, you know, weigh in and give feedback. But it was, you know, less hands-on than, like, definitely our collaboration between Amanda and me. But with Tribeca, Renata actually had illustrated one of my first books, Sally Ann McFidget Bottom. And so with this publisher, they're fine with you going and finding your own illustrator. So I reached out to her to see if she'd be interested in doing it, and, you know, luckily enough, she was, and, you know, both of them just did amazing jobs, and I think, you know, when I look at the stories and the content, I feel like somehow we lucked out in finding the perfect illustrator for each story.
That's awesome. Oh my goodness, I love that, and you kind of just briefly talked about, you know, the publishing process. I mean, was that also hard, you know, finding a publisher to take on this story?
Yeah, I mean, the publishing process is brutal. It's like if you have a thin skin and don't like rejection, definitely do not try to get something published. You know, I don't know the key to getting published. For me, it's just been just continuous, never giving up, and just, you know, continually querying and never letting the endless stream of rejections get you down.
I love that inspiration. You know, I think so many authors and writers definitely need to hear that. So thank you so much. And, you know, Howard, you're also a copywriter. How does your copywriting experience influence your writing for children's books and or vice versa?
I would say that, you know, being a copywriter has been the perfect background for being a picture book writer. And ads, you know, you're really just telling a little story that is a combination of words and visuals. And so the same thing is true with picture books. You know, the words and the pictures complement each other and kind of take that story to the next level. And so I feel like that background really prepared me well, you know, to kind of segue into a picture book writing career.
And how did you, for the both of you, how did you both know that you wanted to become authors? You know, how did you know that you wanted to write these books? I mean, did you have experience, you know, prior to writing any of the stories that you've written before?
I mean, so I've always enjoyed writing short stories, poetry, never really gotten things published, but I've always enjoyed that as a hobby. So having the ability to turn that into an opportunity to actually publish and have other people read what I've written was really cool.
Yeah, awesome. For me, you know, I never really thought about doing that, but it was like in 2018, you know, I don't know if I was going through a late midlife crisis or something, but I was doing some soul searching and decided, you know, I spent my entire career creating these ads for other people, and it'd be really nice to do something that I wanted to do and, you know, with my own kind of vision based on just whatever came to my mind. And so I just decided, you know, why not try it? You know, if I could write these ads that are little stories, you know, maybe I could do the same with books.
Interesting. Cool. And Amanda, I think your background is a little different from Howard's. Do you ever find like the background that you have, like, intertwined with writing? I believe your background is, like, a lawyer, is it? Correct me if I'm wrong.
It is, yes. I'm a lawyer, and I do a lot of writing in my day job, and it's a lot drier and a lot more dull than writing children's books. So doing the children's books was a great outlet because it allowed me to be a lot more creative, you know, rhyme, be funny, which are all things that are pretty frowned upon in the legal system.
And I know it definitely, you know, writing these children's books has to provide you just this joyful feeling compared to, like, your other day job, right?
Definitely.
Now, there, Howard, you've also written some other books. There's Orange Porange. I mean, there's Sally Ann, Connor Crowe. I mean, what can you tell us more about those stories as well?
Yeah. I'll start with Sally Ann McFidgetbottom. So my wife teaches, or actually just retired from teaching kindergarten. And my favorite stories of hers when she came home were the ones about the kids who just, you know, were good-hearted, but for whatever reason could not control themselves and, you know, couldn't sit still during rest time, couldn't walk in a straight line down the hall. And so I thought that's a great idea for a story because, you know, there are other kids that obviously, you know, can't sit still. So that was the inspiration for Sally Ann McFidgetbottom. And then, you know, Orange Porange was my first book, and that I just had this, like, random idea of wanting people to feel included. You know, I think, you know, people feel different than others, and colors kind of represent, you know, that people do have differences, but there is a way for everybody to get along, and, you know, everybody is valuable in their own unique way. And that was kind of inspiration for Orange Porange and the follow-up books in that series.
Okay, and what can you tell us about Connor Crowe?
Yeah, so Connor Crowe Can't Let Go was actually, my wife and I went out to breakfast one morning, and I noticed that, like, every parent, it seemed like, was on their phone, and then when their kids, who were being ignored, started acting up, they just handed them their phones to kind of entertain them. And I thought that was really sad, and so I thought about these kids that are on these devices starting from these young ages, and, you know, that they're bound to get addicted to them, because it's just gives them so much pleasure to do those. So I thought, you know, maybe I could do some sort of cautionary tale, like a modern-day twist on The Chocolate Touch, where, you know, a kid is, you know, dreams of just being, never having let go of his tablet. And sure enough, the Connor Crowe's dream comes true, but he soon realizes that, you know, being attached to your tablet and not being able to engage with your parents and family is not everything it's cracked up to be.
Oh, wow. That is awesome. And, you know, so I believe I've read that the library kind of, like, takes a little bit of influence from Dr. Seuss, and especially with the rhyming aspect, which I just have to say, you just did a phenomenal job with that. And, to further add on to that, I wonder, you know, what children's books did you enjoy reading growing up? I mean, was it always Dr. Seuss? And, you know, did they have, like, an impact in your writing in any way, shape, or form for the both of you guys?
I mean, I was definitely a big Dr. Seuss fan when I was that age, and I was, you know, preschool, kindergarten age. You know, my parents read a ton of books to me. I was really, you know, a reader from the time I was little. And it's funny because, like, even these random picture books from childhood, they'll sometimes pop up in my head, you know, 30 years later, I'll be thinking about, you know, I went to Walla Walla, Washington recently and thought about, oh yeah, Double Trouble in Walla Walla. It's just things that stick in your mind. So I hope maybe our books end up doing the same for some kids.
Yeah, and how for about, me, it's, I was going to say, like, you know, Dr. Seuss definitely, you know, when I was a kid, and then reading those to our kids was just, you know, I think some of our favorites. So I would say definitely Dr. Seuss influenced us somehow.
Awesome. And, you know, given that, you know, you guys are influenced by Dr. Seuss, I'm wondering now, what do you hope that kids and especially families take away from the library?
Well, for me, for the library, you know, the takeaway I hope people get is just to look at things critically. And, you know, it's not really about books from the library. It's just about what you're hearing in the world around you. You know, it's like if you see something online, social media, you know, even the news online. It's like, if it doesn't quite ring true, you know, don't take it at face value. Think critically about it and decide for yourself if this is actually true instead of just believing everything at face value.
I love that. Now I wonder, like, if, like, when writing the story, like, are you rethinking about, like, the library that you might visit yourself? Or, like, I wonder if you're like, oh, man, I wonder, like, if these books are actually true or not. Like, whenever you go there, you know?
Well, I think, you know, like, the actual library, you know, we're huge fans of the library. And, you know, like, when our daughters were little, you know, we spent so much time there. And they're a tremendous source of reliable information. So, you know, I definitely wouldn't want that to be the takeaway. It's more just about that idea of critical thinking. And, you know, just because you see it, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean it's true.
That's very true. I love that message so much. How do you, you know, given that this is Joy on Paper, you know, how do you both find joy on paper? You know, how do you find the joy when it comes to writing stories? You know, is there, you know, are you always happy, you know, when you write these stories, or do you find like this emotional inspiration, like when you write these stories, you know?
I would say for me that I am always happy when writing stories, because it just kind of gets you into that flow state where you're just being purely creative and having fun. And that's something that I feel like, you know, adults don't have that many opportunities to just like play and have fun. And I feel like that's what writing is for me. And you can see that also in the outcome. Like Orange was your first published book, right? I was reading that to a friend's kid who's like 2 years old, and he was melting down with laughter. He was falling off the couch. And it was just like, that was just so much fun to see that joy being spread around.
That's awesome. Oh my goodness. You know, I should also ask, how about you, Howard? You know, how do you find joy when it comes to writing these stories?
Yeah, I would say like the initial joy is really just getting that inspiration for the story. It's like, you know, that inspiration just comes from anywhere. You know, like I mentioned, just the library. And it's just when that initial spark to me, sparks joy, I guess I'd say, you know, and you realize, you know, there is something here that could be fun or entertaining or interesting in some way. And then, you know, seeing it come together on paper, you know, is also like a joyful moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And I definitely know, like, when you see these kids or, you know, any family read your story, I know it just has to provide some sort of warmth feeling to you. Am I right?
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you guys have any advice for anyone who wants to be an author or maybe even a copywriter?
Yeah, I mean, let me think. So, I mean, it's two different worlds. So for the author part, you know, it's like, I would say my biggest advice is that you have to be, if you want to make something out of it, you have to be committed to it, not just interested in doing it. It's like I mentioned, the publishing process or trying to get something published is brutal. So you have to like put that idea of, you know, becoming a published author above everything and not let anything distract you or deter you or defeat you, and just keep going no matter what. And, you know, you don't, if that's not your dream to be published, that's fine, just to write for pleasure, for sure. So I'm definitely referring more to somebody who wants to see their work published. You know, copywriting is another beast, and I'd say, you know, there's definitely a lot of talk in the news that AI is killing copywriting, and I definitely see that is not true. So I would, you know, encourage people who, you know, want to make a career out of writing, copywriting, to pursue it. And, you know, there are a lot of great schools you could go to or courses to take. But just, you know, I guess the biggest advice for any aspiring writer is that writers write. And so just write.
Awesome. Awesome. Amanda, do you have any advice for any writers out there?
Yeah, I mean, I think I really agree with what you said earlier about rejection and about kind of being open to constructive criticism and not viewing criticism as, oh, I'm a terrible writer, I shouldn't be doing this, but viewing it as an opportunity to grow and to improve, and that's, there's always those opportunities, and you should seize on them. And the one thing that helps, too, is just when you're writing a first draft of anything, view it like you're just writing it for yourself. Like, it's going to just be put in your drawer, nobody's ever going to see it, and that gives you that kind of confidence to really be bold with it, to have fun with it, and then during your many stages of revision, you can always say, now I'm writing this for an audience, now it's going to be published, and kind of have that mindset.
I love that. Awesome. And I have to ask, Howard, do you enjoy copywriting more or, you know, writing children's books more?
I've been doing copywriting a long time, so I am definitely enjoying writing children's books a lot more, but, you know, copywriting still pays the bill, so I'm happy to do that.
Awesome. And in 2024 and in 2025, I believe you will be releasing new books called This Book Is Not For You and The Bad Book for Good Kids, both published by Familius. What can readers expect from those upcoming titles?
Yeah, I'm actually like super excited about those to be coming out. But one thing also for people to know is like the publishing process is like so incredibly slow. Like both of these books have been in the works for years, and it's shocking because advertising is such a fast-paced industry. And then for somebody to say, you know, oh, here's a, you know, it's 2021, this book will come out in 2025, is just like hard for my mind to grasp. But both of those books are kind of I guess you'd call them meta title or meta stories, where there's a lot of breaking of that fourth wall and there's interaction between the book and the reader. So I think they'll make for interesting, fun titles that definitely don't take themselves too seriously.
I love that. I love that. And, you know, I of course have to say thank you both so much for coming on the show. And real quickly, you know, where can people find your books?
Yeah, well, my website, howardperlstein.com, all of them are there. And, of course, they could just search on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. I guess just type in Perlstein and see what comes up.
Awesome, awesome. Well, thank you so much, Howard and Amanda, for coming on the show today. We wish you all the best. The library is now available to purchase, and coming soon is Tribeca, so be on the lookout for when that book releases on July 18th, 2023. Howard and Amanda, thank you both so much again.
Thank you so much for having us, Devon.
Of course, no problem. And coming up next, we'll have a special interview with children's author and illustrator Calvin Reynolds of the Jace the Beast series, right here on Joy on Paper.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author? An artist? An inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
everybody. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. My name is Devon Miller, one of the correspondents here for Joy on Paper. And today it is a joy to sit in for Patsy, you know, that's with a Z, by the way, to be a guest host for today's show. Earlier in the show, I teased that we'd have another children's author on the program. Our guest is someone who is an award-winning author, illustrator, and the creator of the Jace the Bee and Harold children's books. Everyone, please help me welcome Calvin Reynolds to Joy on Paper.
Hello, hello.
Hi, how are you, Calvin?
All right, how you doing, Devon?
Doing good. It's so great to hear your voice.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks for having me.
Of course, not a problem. Well, I also have to say congratulations on your newest release, Harold the Amazing, which just came out on Tuesday.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Oh,
yeah, the
my
Harold
goodness.
Series was a surprise that I did not see coming. But yeah, thank you.
Yeah, of course, and you know you. Please tell readers what can readers expect from this newest edition in the Harold series.
Well, this is the final. This will be the final Harold book. It's the third in the series. This is just a short picture story about, you know, the importance of being amazing is just kind acts of common courtesy, examples of how kindness can make you an amazing person. And I think that's a very important message, I think, for our young ones right now. And, you know, throughout the story, you kind of see where Harold, and you kind of read about Harold, how he feels like he's a hero. You know, he's a superhero. His superpower is, you know, just doing kind things for people. And that's what makes him amazing.
I love that. Oh my goodness, that is amazing. And you know, you mentioned that this
first book. I'm sorry, Devon. The first book was Harold Gets an F, and it was a small story about time management. And you know, he was kind of struggling with time management and got a big F, you know, in his classroom. So I thought it'd be a great way to close out the series with Harold the Amazing, you know, playing off of the A, amazing. So, now I'm excited for it.
Oh, likewise. I think I read another book in the Harold series, Harold's Big Dreams, and, you know, I was just about to ask, how does this latest edition in the Harold series add on to what the series is about?
Each book is kind of, it stands on its own. They're not like a continuation of each other. So again, the first book was more about time management. The second book, Harold's Big Dreams, focuses directly on following your dreams. Your adventure starts with dreaming. As a kid, I often imagine, you know, myself and going off in these imaginary worlds. I imagine myself being, you know, a superhero of sorts. And that was the message of Harold's Big Dreams, you know. You follow your passion, don't be afraid to dream and dream big, you know. The third story here is just more about getting back to the basics, you know, kindness. Being amazing isn't hard to achieve. You know, it's being kind to others and you know, simple acts of, you know, kindness is a big deal. So I think each story has an individual message that resonates with just everyone, and I think that's important.
I love that so much. That is awesome. And did you know that Harold would eventually become a series? You know, I'm now curious to know, like, where exactly did the character originate from? Was it just from that first story, but itself?
No, I did not. It was like a nice little surprise over the last 3 years. you know, back in 2020 when we were in the COVID phase of our situation here, you know, you had a lot of kids homeschooled, you know, and a lot of parents were for the first time challenged with trying to be teachers. And one of the common things I realized for, you know, just looking around was time management. You know, kids were struggling with now being at home and, you know, being faced with doing their math and science and things of that nature. So I thought, you know, it just dawned on me. I thought it'd be a great idea to do a story of a little kid who's very smart kid, but, you know, misses an opportunity and takes an opportunity for granted when he doesn't use his time wisely to prepare for a test. And,
interesting.
And I wanted to change my art style, you know, so mm-hmm. as you know, it's, you know, it's completely different from the Jace the Bee series. Mm-hmm. You know, Harold is definitely, you know, something that's out of my comfort zone as it relates to just, you know, doing something completely different. And this art style is more familiar to people. It's bright, simple shapes. And I think that attracted, you know, a larger audience as well. And, yeah, once I released the first book, man, I had no idea it was going to take off the way it did. And from there, I just thought, you know, I kept getting messages. People would inbox me, you know, when is Harold coming back? Are you going to do another Harold story? And I kind of, you know, and you're a fellow author. You know, sometimes you kind of have to, you know, it has to hit you. You know, it has to be something special. I don't want to just write something that, you know, I'm not passionate about. And so I sat on Harold for like a year, and then I just thought, you know, why not take a little bit of what I see with my kids, a lot of the things I see with other people, you know, about believing and dreaming big. And why not try to establish that thought process with a younger audience while they're still holding on and dreaming about, you know, the creativity. When you see kids and how excited they get when, you know, you take them to see a Marvel movie or they're watching, you know, and watching and learning, and you want to capture that. So, you know what? That was it for me. And I was like, you know what? Harold's big dreams. You know, and so, you know, yeah. So here we are with the third book, Harold the Amazing, which I just thought this would be a great time. We have a certain climate right now, and I just think this would be a great time to remind our kids about how important it is to just be kind. You know, common courtesy is important. And, you know, that's something that we definitely don't want our kids to not know that. And we kind of want to remind them of that in a fun way.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, earlier you touched on this interesting subject that I'm curious about. You mentioned that Jace the Bee series and Harold series, they have these different art styles. So I'm wondering, how did you find that style to distinguish both those series? Or how did you know, like, one would fit the other and, you know, how one probably wouldn't fit with the other?
Well, I have a little bit more about me, and, you know, for the audience, you know, I've worked in the corporate environment as a lead graphic designer for over the last 23 years. So, worked with Majestic Sports and Fanatics. So a lot of my background has been in the sportswear industry as a graphic designer. And so one of the benefits of that is learning a lot of the nuances of the profession of being an artist. And so I'm always looking at things that are cutting edge, things that are different. And so over the years, I familiarized myself with different art styles and things that are trending. And things of that nature. So when I first thought out to do Jace the Bee, I wanted my art to look different, right? It's definitely not a simplistic art style. It takes a little bit more time to execute and expedite each illustration, but I felt it was something that would look different and, you know, just challenging certain aspects of art. You know, I wanted my colors to be super bright because I just looking at my kids and just looking at kids in general, when you look at their entertainment, the things that they're attracted to, you know, it's a digital age. And so kids, they have more devices that they're looking at. Those devices have vibrant colors. And I wanted to create Jace to have that type of vibrant look. And so, you know, after working on Jace for so many years, back in 2020, I started admiring more and more. Because, you know, again, I love comic books. I grew up reading comic books, you know, Stan Lee and Marvel and DC. And that would just fuel my creative juices. And so I kind of wanted to do Harold in a more simplistic way where I can just have fun. And not that Jace isn't fun, but Jace is very meticulous. The art style is very somewhere in between comic book cel shade and oil paintings. Whereas Harold is just simple shapes, cel shaded look, very vibrant colors. And so I thought that would be a great contrast to create. You got your Jace the Bee series that has a different art style, and you have your Harold stories that are just more familiar. You know, Harold is more your traditional look, like SpongeBob, or you know, just some of the stuff that's more familiar with kids and adults alike. And I think as I venture out, I will probably produce other stories, because I have a lot of stories I would like to tell, I will probably explore even more with different art styles.
Okay.
I'm sorry if that was a long answer.
Oh, no, we love it. We love it. We love hearing these stories. And now I'm sitting here wondering, you mentioned that you were inspired by Marvel and the comics. I mean, can we expect to see a comic book series soon from you?
No. Short answer, no. I'm a fan. I'm a huge fan. But honestly, we have a lot of those type of stories and those type of art styles out there. And, you know, I'm inspired by it. I kind of like being a big fan of that. You know, I attend the Tampa Bay Comic Cons, the Atlanta Comic Cons. I'm a huge fan of it, but I have no interest in creating, you can never say never. But at least right now, I just don't have the desire to try to create a graphic novel to the level of a comic book. Although I as you know, Devon, I illustrate for independent authors, and the last book that I just illustrated was pretty close, sort of like a graphic novel. It's pretty close to like a comic book. It's the closest thing I've created, you know. To a comic book, but the short answer is no.
No. I mean, no. And you also just touched on one of my other questions. We definitely know that you've illustrated books for so many different authors. Talk about the collaboration process for that. I mean, how is that different from, you know, just writing by yourself to now you're actually like working with people on their stories?
Yeah. I mean, it's been great. I have different metaphors, you know. I love the energy. You know, you see authors tell their stories for the first time, and it's my job to kind of help them visualize and help bring their story to life. I have a great analogy that I try to, you know, just help independent authors understand where there has to be a trust in the process where, you know, of course, the writer, the author is the writer, and the producer, it will be the publisher, and the director is the illustrator. So if we're all on the same page, we're going to make a great movie. So your book, I tend to look at it like, hey, your book is a movie. So visualize your book as a movie. And if we're all on the same page, if we have that level of trust, we're gonna have a good movie. What tends to happen sometimes, if there's a breakdown, and you see it all the time. I mean, I think we're all kind of privy to it when we get excited about a certain movie or a certain TV show, and it's like, man, what happened? You know, and it's normally either there's a breakdown between those three areas. And I think the most successful movies stories and books are when you see that trust, and you see how that collaborative, those three areas work and gel so well together that, you know, it turns out to be a great finished product. So far, I mean, working with independent authors has been really cool, creating and getting out of my comfort zone as it relates and as it compares to me working on my own. You know, it's just a freedom, you know, the freedom of, you know, I'm going to do my book the way I want to do them. And when I'm actually working with a client, you know, it's what the client wants. And that's always the goal, is to give the client something that they could be extremely proud of many years from now, and something that I can look at and just take pride in as well. You know, my goal is to never shortchange any client. You know, I want to put out the best work that I can produce at that point in time, and so I can be proud of it just as well. So, yeah, it's been great.
Well, I know you most certainly have to be proud of all that you've accomplished. I know kids are most certainly excited about your Jace the Beast series and, of course, the Herald books. I think I saw it on a PBS segment. And so we've been talking about Jace the Beast, but for our audience listeners who might not know about it, I mean, can you explain, like, what is Jace the Beast? Like, what are those books about?
Yeah, great question. Jace, as you know, Jace is now about 10 years old. I started working on Jace. I got this whole vision of Jace back in 2013. And Jace is just a character that I created to just resonate with everyone, kids and adults alike. The name, you know, it's just an overall aesthetic that ties into what the character is about. The name, the meaning of the name is just accepting yourself changes everything. And he's a little colorful bee that doesn't have a stinger. In this multiverse, he doesn't, you know, this bee doesn't have a stinger. But he has a heart the size of a mountain. And you become more familiar with Jace as he, you know, goes on these adventures, showcasing teamwork, believing in himself, self-esteem, and you know, things of that nature. Yeah. So he's been a fun character. I must say I'm so glad that you know, I was able to come up with something like that character. It seems like he is a character that just stands out. People really connect with the character, and you know, here's to the future. You know, looking forward to more fan reaction with Jace, and looking forward to just trying to continue to grow that franchise with new opportunities that may arise.
I love that. And There are five Jace the Beast books so far, correct?
Yes, yes. You have Jace, the first book, Jace, A Bee Adventure. The second book was Jace the Bee, Journey to the Polka Dot Village. The third book was or is Mayhem in Beatopia. Then after that, it's Days to Be, The Great Biathlon. And then the final is Days to Be, Time to Shine. And again, each book has a great message. You know, there's stories about sportsmanship, reaching your potential, diversity, forgiveness, you know, just great messages for kids and adults alike as well.
And was it always meant to be a series?
No. You know, honestly, no. The first Jace the Bee book was just a story that I wanted to tell. Jace a Bee Adventure, I set out to just do one book. And, you know, that's the amazing part of this whole journey, Devon, is just you just never know where it's going to take you. And, you know, my goal was to write a story and illustrate it and something that could inspire children, something I could look back on. But I really learned a lot. You know, I've learned a lot through the first book. You know, they always say the first book is the toughest, and I think I agree with that. But, yeah, I never thought it would turn into what it has. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a game app. I think you know that. There's a game app on the mm-hmm. Apple App Store that ties into the franchise. So, you know, again, we're in such a digital age where, you know, kids are using these devices. So I thought, you know, it'd be great to speak their language as well, try to entice them to read more. So I know with my son, he's a big Sonic the Hedgehog guy. So, mm-hmm. you know, and Mario. So if there's anything literature-wise, he's going to read it because that's something that he really enjoys. So I thought, you know, that'd be great to encourage kids to read things that they really like. You know, I don't know if I'm saying that correctly. I guess what I looked at and what I realized, if you entice a young mind, if it's something that they really, really enjoy, they're going to read it. They're going to want to know more about it. And so I took that thought process and said, hey, you know, what if I can create a game app that's based on the stories? Well, that gives them an incentive to want to read the stories. So it's just a way to kind of bundle everything together in a language that the kids can resonate with and encourage them to want to read the Jace the Bee stories.
I love that. Interesting.
Yeah.
And how do you find the messages, these specific messages, to integrate within the Jace the Bee series?
I guess I'm just kind of inspired by just, they're all around us. You know, I don't know if there's different stories. It's just how you tell the story. Like, you know, overcoming obstacles. I'm sure there's, you know, a bunch of stories out there that address that message. You know, being yourself, accepting yourself. For me, it was just more of looking deep within myself, seeing how my kids and other kids would struggle with a self-esteem, you know, and feeling like they don't belong. You know, when it's all in the mind, you know, it's you know, how do you take those messages and incorporate them in a way that kids can understand that you know you do have value, you know, you do have what it takes, you know. And so for me, I was inspired by life, you know, just looking around, the stories around us all over, you know, every day there's some type of story that could be packaged in a way that, you know, there's a lesson to it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's pretty much what keeps me going. You know, like some of the stories that I hope to be releasing, independent stories that I hope to be releasing in the next year or two, you know, they're completely different. But I think there's stories that I've been wanting to tell for a while, and I'm excited about them, you know? So, yeah, I'm always looking for inspiration. I'm always looking for different stories. So, yeah.
Awesome. And, you know, for just real quickly, you know, where can readers find your stories? Where can they go to purchase them?
You can Barnes & Noble, Amazon, most online distribution channels carry the Jace the Bee and Harold stories. Or you can purchase, you can purchase directly from jacethebee.com, which is my personal website for the Jace the Bee series and also the Harold stories.
Awesome. Well, Calvin, thank you so much for coming on the show today. We wish you all the best. The Jace the Bee series alongside the Harold series is now available to purchase. So, Calvin, thank you so much again for coming on the show.
It's been a pleasure and an honor. Thank you for having me.
Of course, not a problem. And, of course, thank you to everyone who has been listening to this episode. It's been an absolute pleasure to be here. Thank you to Patsy and to the Joy on Paper crew. As Patsy always says, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, to hear them spoken in an audible book, or, if you're very lucky, your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or a series on the Hallmark Channel. If you enjoyed this episode and you want to see previous episodes or keep in the know about future Joy on Paper episodes, be sure to visit our website at radio-joyonpaper.com and follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Joy on Paper. Thank you so much to Patsy for allowing me to guest host today. Thank you so much to Big Ed over in the control room and all the crew members over at Tantalk Radio Network. And of course, thank you to all the wonderful people involved in Joy on Paper who make this program such a joy to be a part of. I hope I was able to provide a little joy in your day today, but we'll see you next time on Joy on Paper. I think it's about time that I buzz out now.